Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Cindy, there's a chill in the air.
I know. I love this time of the year. I'm so excited. I feel so alive.
Baseball is done.
Oh, is it? I thought they played. Didn't they just play on Sunday? I don't pay attention.
I'm afraid I don't pay attention. But I do.
Did see people running around with Orioles shirts on Sunday. I swear
and
I did.
When baseball is done, it's time for soup.
Okay. Well.
I know that sounds weird, but that's a childhood association that's strong in my mind. It's like when you're done, you know, when you stop playing baseball and you start playing football and you're a little kid, it's like, you know, you go to your great grandmother's house and she's going to be making soup.
Sounds like a wonderful situation to me.
Yeah.
All right. This could be very lengthy.
I love soup.
One of my favorite things to make as a chef.
Well, when you think about, you could have a soup that was different, but exactly right for that day. I'm going to be soup
365 days a year. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. I mean, like a metaphor would be like you would pick exactly the right necktie every day. That's a reason. Well, you know, it's that choice that is exactly the thing for that day. What is that weather? What is going on? What is in
personalized
the market?
Personalized soup.
Exactly. What is your mood?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was kind of thinking just because you said football. That doesn't have anything to do with personalized, but it does in a way because I was thinking of a beer soup.
A beer soup?
Yeah, which
there's
would be
no
great
one,
for a
there's
football
no
game.
One, there's no one in the world that's not going to want to hear your recipe for
that's,
a beer soup.
That's nice, and thank you, and I think I will tell you then.
Okay.
So beer and cheese soup. I mean, really seriously.
Could there be anything more
American sounding than that? And well, you need, what do I drink what?
Beer while you're making the soup?
I don't, because you know that I don't care for beer, but I think most people probably would. Sure, why not? So
why not?
It's a fun day. It's
Sounds
Sunday.
Reasonable.
The
yeah.
soup is not that hard to make at all, so it just takes a little prep. You need to have some Yukon Gold potatoes. I would go ahead and peel them. That's probably the most prep you're going to find yourself doing besides chopping an onion. So chop an onion. You don't have to worry about the way it looks or really pretty much anything about it because you're going to puree the soup, so you do have to have your blender. And so you saute an onion in butter and add the diced potatoes and cream, beer, and I would use something that you really love. I mean, it's a little bit like all cooking. This is not the place to put the least flavored beer. You want something that's dark and rich and probably pretty hoppy and, you know, just lots and lots of flavor. And Tony's frowning at me.
No, you're just using technical beer terms for the non-beer drinker.
I'm not
impressed.
Allowed to be intelligent when it comes to beer.
No,
thank
of course
you,
you are.
So then we're going to finish the soup with Gruyere cheese. And Gruyere is one of the great melting cheeses. So it's perfect for this sort of soup. And you want to make some wonderful butter. You know, so you're going to saute everything, work it up, put everything in. The beer is kind of fun to put in because it foams up when you add it. And I would show, if I had a child that was old enough, I would probably show them that part because it's kind of cool. And a little salt. I'd put a touch of pepper and a touch of cayenne in. Just give it a little bit of spice. The cheese will like the cayenne. And so will the beer for that matter. And once you've blended it, just all you need is a little garnish. I would reserve a little bit of Gruyere for it, and you can always use a different type of cheese. You could use a smoked Gouda, which would be fun and easy to find at the store if you like that flavor. You can use something a little bit more refined, and that you could find a great one of the great Irish cheddar pieces would be my choice. That's what I would put
in. You could do a nice dark Irish beer and
a nice piece of Kool-Aid or something.
A nice rich Irish cheddar.
Yeah. I have a wheel of Keen's cheddar coming in from the British Isles at the end of October. Actually, no, I'm sorry, right before Thanksgiving, because that is the time that I hope I'll start to see truffles. And I am absolutely going to make beer soup with that Keen's cheddar when it comes in, because it has that wonderful, earthy, celery smell and taste to it that's just really sets it apart as one of the greatest cheddars to me that I've ever tasted. And it is white, so it does not impart color into the soup, but it's really good. And then do some wonderful buttery croutons on top and... You know.
I feel compelled to ask you for a pretzel recipe sometime soon.
Yeah, actually, we were thinking about making pretzels for the bar. Pastry Chef and I are working on that. So I think that would be fun to have little pretzel bites at
but
the bar.
You're at the time
fall.
Of the year you should be sending to guests the amuse-bouche, you know, the little little treats of beer soup and pretzels.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That would be probably the heaviest little treat that you've ever sent, but it makes some people pretty happy.
Yeah. Well, and also you were talking about this time of the year and fall. I can't help but think about apple cider. I love apple cider. And I was thinking it would be very fun to make a fruit soup with apple cider. So sort of in a different perspective, you know, you have these wonderful pears, especially if you have some pears that have gone past their beauty stage. And
I mean, they're not pretty, but they're probably really sweet.
They're so good. Yeah. And making a soup with pears and cider, adding, you know, all those wonderful fall spices, a little bit of nutmeg, a little bit of cinnamon. And in that case, I would probably add some sort of alcohol in the form of whether it's cognac or maybe a Madeira or a sherry to that soup. Or if you don't want to put alcohol in, you could add a touch of lime, just a little bit of fresh lime. I love that. Even though the cider already has some acidity to it, the lime just brightens up the soup. And actually, one of the good ways to handle the fruit while you are dealing with it, and you don't have to peel it because, in this case, you're going to puree it, and it doesn't matter if you have the skins on the pears. So that makes it a little quicker to make. And you're really not cooking anything. It's a soup that you're doing everything cold.
So a chilled soup.
Yeah, chilled soup. And
so Indian summer soup.
Yep. Or you could make the soup. You don't have to cook anything to make it, and then you could eat it. So you could serve it either way. Also make a pear and walnut soup that is a hot soup where you saute onions and shallots gently in butter until it's just sort of just before it begins to get any color. You don't really want any color. And add pears to the pot. And again, when I'm peeling those pears and dealing with them or cutting them, I do rub them with a little bit of fresh lime juice. And then add, you can either use half and half or cream, or you could use stock and cream, whichever you would prefer as far as lightness goes. And again, adding, in this case, I might add port to the soup, which will give it a really pretty deep base. And then add the walnuts near the end, let them become soft and puree and strain. And that's
you're on a
really
streak
good.
Of boozy soups.
Yeah, I like booze in the soup sometimes.
That's actually one of the trickier things to do is to pair wine with soup,
mm-hmm.
especially hot soup, because it's wine's at a particular temperature and soups like a consommé or something, it's essentially impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to have a little bright, savory something, a dry sherry or something. That's about it.
I think it'd be fun for people to make consommé at home and you know, to get that moment of being so proud that you made this thing that takes quite a few steps and then it's perfectly clear and, you know, that you achieved that. I think that's a great thing to achieve as a cook.
I will admit that, yeah, I'd like that, but, you know me, I like things that are a little more country sometimes and have mm-hmm. a little more...
So what's on your mind?
Flavor. Caldo, you know, the hot soup, that traditional hot soup you see in Argentina, that's very much on my brain. The caldo that they make with beef bones, where you roast the beef bones to brown them a little bit in the oven, and you roast the mirepoix, a little heavy on the onions with that, so carrots, celery, onions, and there's always a chili that goes in the pot, and you make the broth with those cracked beef bones, and if you're lucky that you have like rib bones or you know mm-hmm. shoulder blades, that kind of stuff, you get really good protein you get. And you can make that soup where it's almost a little bit reduced. And then it's just a matter of all the vegetables and timing out what vegetables to put in the pot when. Because you have this great, you know, sort of like tan-colored broth. Once you make it the one day, cool it, and then clean it up and get it hot the next day. And then you're going in with turnips and potatoes and sweet potatoes and celery and little tiny sweet onions and carrots and everything remains whole or, mm-hmm. or big pieces kind mm-hmm. of, and all of these things are you know very slowly like boiled or braised in that broth, and just gets finished with a whole bunch of fresh chopped parsley and if you like a little fresh chopped garlic if you have really nice garlic.
Beef broth is just so good.
That and bread, like grilled bread,
mm-hmm.
and that soup.
Sounds very satisfying.
It's not heavy necessarily because it's a broth, but it's very satisfying. It's very like close to the earth. It's like you can feel your leaves change inside. You know,
yeah,
as you consume that soup. I think that's a That's a good thing. And that's the rhythm of making that, I think, also is like if you make the broth on a Saturday and you have that soup to serve, like you have the big brunch or whatever, but you have that soup to serve with that great bread and maybe a piece of cheese afterwards or something for dinner on Sunday night. Nice. I think so. I think that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
So any soups with no booze for you?
One of the other things I like this time of the year are beans a lot. And
well,
I just love working
time
with
for
beans.
All the fresh beans.
So I just...
Black beans, white beans, navy beans, mm-hmm. red beans, kidney beans.
Mm-hmm. So I just...
Butter beans.
Made. Say, are you going to go again?
No.
Jeez. I just made Asturias white bean soup and...
Asturias. I thought you said a serious white bean soup.
No, Asturias.
Okay, Asturias. Yeah.
White bean soup from that region in Spain, and they're famous for these gigantic, gorgeous white beans.
They're like as big as your thumb.
And I got them through La Tienda, which is a company that you can buy from online. So that's why I throw it out there. So if you want to buy the beans, they're very hard to find. I mean, none of my purveyors could produce them for me in less than two, you know, and I gave them 2 weeks notice. I don't know. Yeah, I'm like, oh, gosh. Okay, so let me just go to La Tienda. They are not cheap as far as beans go, but gosh, you know, they're just amazing. And you really need to soak those well overnight. So I would get up in the morning and put them in a container with extra water and put them in the fridge and just let them stay until the next morning. You do rinse them first a couple of times, make sure they're clean. And this soup just gets a whole lot of meat. So a little bit along the lines that you were talking about, a whole lot of vegetables. This has, I would use a whole piece of slab bacon. So let's say right around 12 to 14 ounces. Let's say you're making soup for 10 people. I would use almost a pound of bacon in there. And slab bacon is the whole piece of bacon. Yeah, well, come on.
That's,
you need some
that's serious
bacon
pork and
flavor.
Beans right there.
Yeah. cut it into four pieces, brown it in the pan. And then I also add two different types of chorizo. I had Iberico chorizo, which is really earthy and really fatty and gorgeous. And then another type of chorizo that had a lot of pimenton in it. And... you know, it was literally bright orange. It was very acidic as well. So between the fatty, rich, earthy one, meaty one, dark meaty one, and the spicy in the form of pimenton, which is not hot spice, but a spice, and all the acidity, the two really helped to flavor the soup as well. And because you have to cook the beans so long, that piece of bacon, especially in the form of a slab bacon, because if the meat is really protected by the fat that's around it, that is some really tender, wonderful meat to add back to the soup. When the soup is done, I pull all those big pieces of bacon out and just gently pull that meat out and, you know, put it into bite-sized pieces and put it back into the soup and remove all that fat. And then just onion, shallot, and a good bit of garlic. And then I put fresh, because we're still getting some great red slicing tomatoes. What I did was, it was kind of fun. I've never done this before. What?
Those tomatoes are going to go.
Oh, I know. It's sad. It's cold now at night. Yeah. But I sliced the tomatoes and then sort of julienned them. And I, when I went to cut my head of garlic, I smash it with my knife to pull the skin off, and then I smash it on the board with kosher salt, which helps you to chop it really, really fine. And I rubbed that in with the julienne tomatoes on the board, which is a very unusual thing to do. Normally you wouldn't want, because you don't want to lose any of this juice. But and then I actually drizzled a little bit of extra virgin olive oil on there and ground some pepper in and put some rosemary leaves in, and I just smashed the heck out of it with my hand and kept pushing it into the bowl as it got juicier and juicier. And that's what I put in to really season the soup. And oh my goodness, that was really, really good.
Sounds like
addition.
A violent process.
And I steeped about a tablespoon of saffron in a cup of wine and added that after the saffron got to do its thing in the wine, and added that, and I put a stem of rosemary in and just let it cook slowly and gently. And you know, then afterwards just cleaned it up by removing the fat from the bacon, and it was pretty amazing.
Any soup that starts with a pound of bacon, I think it's gonna probably work out just fine. Well, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we'll have an interview with Eva Dellinger from Dellinger Winery in Sonoma, California. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have with us Eva Dellinger from Dellinger Winery in Sonoma, California. How are you, Eva?
Doing very well.
Hi, Eva. How are you?
Good.
Good.
So you all are at the moment of time that's most critical in the cycle of the year for you, correct?
Exactly. We are right in the middle of harvest.
And so what's already come in, what's coming in now? Give people a little idea of what it is that you all, what you grow, what you produce, and what that cycle of harvest is as things come into the winery.
Sure. Well, it is an early year, so at this point in time, we have already harvested all of our Pinot Noir. And as we speak, my team is picking the very last of our Chardonnay. And in the next day or two, we are going to start in with our Syrah, and then probably in another 10 days, be looking at picking our Cabernet.
Now, it's funny, I had one of my wine shop staff went and did harvest this year at William Saleem, and she's already been back for 10 days or 2 weeks. California, depending upon where you are, has very different harvest times, is it not?
It can, and it varies year by year, probably by about a month. So this year we got started in August. There are other years where we can start picking late September. So there is a fair amount of variation. Where William Saleem is, it's the same region, but it's just a touch warmer. So I wouldn't be surprised that they'd already wrapped up.
What are your temperatures now?
Well, we're actually in the middle of our what's perceived to be the last wave of heat for the year. Mm-hmm. So we experienced near triple digit yesterday, but it alternates. It goes from warm to cool. Today it's supposed to be in the mid-90s, and then late this week it's supposed to get pretty cool and cloudy.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty hot for this late, isn't it?
It is, but it is not, well, I'll say it's not unusual for us to experience warm weather in late September and even into October if we're lucky.
You want to take a moment or two and give us an idea of the history of the winery, how your family got into it, and where you all are?
Yeah, with pleasure. Well, it's got a long history. We have 40 years of history because the company was started by my father, Tom. And he got going as a pretty young man. It was the mid-70s, and he had been in the wine industry just a couple years when he was hit with an entrepreneurial bug and came and found a ranch in the Russian River Valley, which at that time was it was in apples. There were a number of apples in the area. And saw the land and felt that it was going to be the perfect place to plant his vineyard, and started at that time with three varieties, with Pinot, Chardonnay, and Cab. It's a mix of varieties, which at the time, Cabernet was considered to be more of a sure bet, and Pinot and Chardonnay were more, believe it or not, more fringe. And in over 40 years, that narrative has flipped, and the region has become known for Pinot and Chardonnay.
Yeah, I think I probably, when people speak to me about, you know well enough that what a fan I am of the Pinot Noirs that you all make, that people are always sort of shocked that they've not heard of the winery, don't know the name, and are shocked that the prices are actually fair for the really spectacular stuff that you guys put in the bottles.
Thank you.
When did your, I know in the early 90s I was seeing things from single vineyard sites. That wasn't really de rigueur in California for, I guess, probably until that time. When did he start separating out plots into different bottlings?
Let's see. Our first, and to give some perspective, what we're doing is really estate-focused. So we have got 40 acres of vineyard, and it's all on one site. So when I'm speaking about the different varieties, it's all here on one ranch. And so in some sense, our focus has always been, or has long been, I should say, single vineyard, although as you're indicating, it hasn't always been promoted as such. And in the early 90s, we started really picking apart the different aspects of our vineyard and learning about the differences in the soil types. And in the first part of the 90s, we did our first Gold Ridge bottling, which is a soil-specific Pinot Noir bottling, and was a precursor to our Altamont bottling, which is also soil-specific. So it's been several decades now of exploring the nuances of our site and the different different aspects that different soil can give to a wine.
And the Gold Ridge bottling is the only vertical of American Pinot that I have in my cellar at the house.
How about that?
And now there was a bottling, it's funny, I think I still have one or two 94s left. At that time there was also a bottling called Octagon, wasn't there?
Yes. Yes. In fact, we do many different bottlings from our ranch, each heralding from a different portion of the property. So we have Octagon, we have High Plains. In some years, we'll do an Old Vine Reserve. We do Champ de Mars. And in the last year, we have done Renatus, which is from our replanted vines.
What are the different types of soil that you have that you found then?
Our two types of soil, our two main types of soil are Gold Ridge and Altamont, which also goes by the name Sebastopol series.
Okay.
And they're both weathered marine sandstone, mm-hmm. although they look very different. The Altamont is much redder in color, and it's got a higher portion of clay, whereas the Gold Ridge has much less clay and is quite sandy.
How did you get involved in the business? Because of your father, or?
Yeah. I grew up on the property. I grew up surrounded by the vineyards and winemaking. And I was, as a child, always very comfortable getting dirty, and I still am.
That's
and it's
great.
a pretty important attribute of being in wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always very interested in science, and studied earth sciences with a focus on land management. And about the time that I was finishing college, was very interested in the Bay Area beverage culture. Was eyeing perhaps entering the brewing industry, and ultimately landed with wine, loving the agricultural connection. That's one thing that is very special about being in winemaking, is that you can participate in the whole spectrum of what it takes, starting with a grape and going to the glass.
Mm-hmm. Have you worked for other houses other than your family's?
I've been lucky to have a series of stages around the world, in France, New Zealand, Australia, that have helped inform my work here at Dehlinger.
That's great.
Any big surprises on your stages?
Big surprises.
Hmm.
Maybe this isn't a surprise, but one thing that what has been a delight about seeing the world and traveling the world is learning what a strong connection there is between wine cultures around the globe, that you can go to France, Australia, Germany, Spain, and find families who are growing and making wine and who are dedicating their lives to the same thing, and will welcome people who are doing the same activity from around the world.
That's great. It's a sharing community.
So what's the your favorite of the more mature wines from Dehlinger over the years?
Ooh, favorites. You mentioned the 94 vintage. That's a pretty special vintage. The Pinot Reserve from that year is certainly one of my favorites. On the Syrah front, I'm a huge fan of our 06 and 07 Syrahs. Those are tasting really, really well right now.
Any oddball varieties that I know once upon a time that you all got, was it 09 that you got some Zin from a neighbor that you all bottled?
We did, yeah. That was a fun project. We got some Old Vine Dry Creek Zin. This is dry farmed, cross cultivated. And we made a blend with Petite Syrah that was also grown on the same property. And it was a fun one-time project. But I'm a huge fan of Zinfandel. Tom is too, my father Tom. So it was an amusing way to branch out and do something a little different.
So sort of oddly, soups are one of the tougher matches for wines. Maybe as from your perspective, you can help us out. We're doing a program on soups.
Oh, great.
And some are not so easy to match with wine. So it occurred to me, do you have a favorite?
A favorite soup or a favorite match?
Both.
Let's see. Soups, I think perhaps the challenge is the texture in terms of matching, but the flavors in some way are a natural, because I think of soups, I think of savory flavors, which go so well with wine. And the first thing that comes to mind for me are the soups that my mother makes from vegetables that we grow here on the ranch. So minestrone with homegrown tomatoes and kale, and you get rich, savory flavors that can go well with any number of wines, with Pinot and even Syrah and Cab. So that's when I think of soup and wine, I think of minestrone. I also think of pumpkin. We grow a lot of pumpkin here on the property. And pumpkin soup with Chardonnay would be in my realm of favorites.
That can be pretty fun. We get some pretty spectacular pumpkins from a particular farm on the eastern shore of Maryland that we look forward to every year playing around with. There's a pumpkin soup with chilies that we make in one of the restaurants that is pretty fantastic with your Chardonnay.
Thank you.
Any other matches in general that you like or really don't like about, you know, dishes for wines that you all make?
Well, this isn't in the soup category, but my absolute favorites are any lamb dish with Syrah and duck confit with Pinot. Those are just classics.
Sounds good.
That's funny. I often want mushroom garnishes on dishes with your pinots.
Beautiful.
Especially if it's got a little bit of bottle age on it. Getting back into the, I guess the 05s and 04s now. So other favorite wineries in the region that we should know about that are up and coming that maybe people haven't seen on the East Coast yet?
There's so many great producers doing wonderful things with local fruit. We were just talking about Zinfandel. I think there are really excellent Zinfandels coming from the Russian River Valley. My favorites are from Carlisle and from Hartford Family. Those are beautiful wines made with old vine, Zin, and mixed with many other varieties naturally in the field. On the Pinot front, Radio Coteau, Cobb, closer to the coast, lot of producers specializing in Pinot and Chardonnay and doing a wonderful job.
Great. Maybe take a second and tell folks where they could learn more about Dellinger Wines.
They could start by coming to our website and reading a bit more about what we do and seeing some of the photos of the ranch and the property and our wines. And if they wanted to learn more, they could sign up to join our mailing list. We send out newsletters twice a year chronicling what we're doing on the farm and the wines we're making.
And the mailing list, is that accessed via website or?
To sign up, you can certainly sign up on the website.
And that's it's Dellinger?
Dehlinger, DellingerWinery.com.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot for coming on the program.
My pleasure.
Look forward to seeing you out there.
Thank you so much, Eva.
Take care.
Very cool to get her on. That's funny. Mm-hmm. I remember meeting her dad in the middle 80s, and he was all fired up.
That's cool.
And already making cool stuff.
Great wines.
And and then with those 94s, it's like, oh, this guy is serious business.
Right.
And it's cool to see it move to the next generation.
Yeah, it always is. So makes me so happy to have a next generation take over.
And you don't mind seeing the woman in charge?
No, I don't. I think that's very cool that she's in charge.
When we come back on Formidable Fun Food and Wine, a little more soup chatter, and then Chef Challenge, if you think you're up to it, Chef.
Chef Challenge. Here we go.
On WIPR.
Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
I'm Tony Foreman.
Yeah. And so, Tony, do you have some
You're
soup
so excited.
Ideas? I am.
Started the segment.
I can't wait for the Chef's Challenge. I think it's fun. And that was great to talk with Eva. She's amazing. That was very cool.
Oh, this stuff,
That's
is,
nice
this stuff is just beautiful.
Well, I mean, what a busy time for her to stop and talk to us. Harvest, oh my goodness. So that was really great.
Yeah. No, that's... It's funny. When I was talking to Leah, who works with me, who just got back from Harvest at Williams Salium.
Right.
She came back with the same piece of wisdom that most people do when they work Harvest for the first time, is that it takes a lot of beer to make wine.
Uh-oh.
It's a lot of work and a lot of sweats.
Right,
and a lot of simple food.
It's a great experience.
At the end of the day, so.
Good for her. That's great that she got to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have some soup ideas?
I've got another.
What's on your mind, Tony?
Another soup of the Americas. I'm thinking about. Okay, acorn squash. I was always frustrated by acorn squash because it never seemed to have any flavor.
Okay.
And so I monkey with it.
It is a little lacking. I don't work with acorn squash.
Right. So I found when I rub acorn squash with cinnamon, salt, really good honey.
Good, yeah.
And roast it and cool it in the husk. Mm-hmm. You know, like split it in half, clean it out, do all that, cool it in the husk, and then scrape it out next day. Or an hour later, or when, you know, however you want to make it work. Mm-hmm. You've been sweating sweet onion in the pot, just nice white fresh onions. Not a gigantic amount. If it's probably one onion to two squash.
Okay.
And you need to have prepared two apples. Granny Smiths, they're nice. And making a soup with that roasted acorn squash and the apples. And finish that with a little bit of chili, depending upon how much heat you want. Just it could be nice chili oil. It could be almost like a relish or a salsa with sweet and hot peppers. Mm-hmm. I had made some pickled padrons, the red padrons.
Those things are really spicy.
Those are serious
business. We were eating them in the walk-in to see how spicy they were. I'm like, this is brutal.
If you want the soup a little bit richer, a little bit heavier, basically a little bit starchier, you can add white beans to it.
Yeah.
And that's an easy way. If you want it more like light, silky, you can go without that. But that's an easy pureed soup. And the acidity from the apple and a little
acorn
bit of heat.
Acorn squash and Granny Smith
And the
apples.
Sweetness and the honey is terrific. And it's a light, beautiful soup.
A little crispy pancetta garnish wouldn't be bad either.
Nope. Pork never hurt anybody.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Any more on your mind?
I was really thinking about, some sort of meat-based soup that has rabbit in it. I just love rabbit, and I like making stock from rabbit. It's very pretty and sweet. So making a quick stock from
the
bones.
That's a delicate stock.
Yeah, and it doesn't take long to make, which is nice. I mean, they're tiny bones, so you're not going to get much gelatin from them, but the flavor is really nice. And if you just lightly brown them in the oven and then go to make your stock with mirepoix, carrot, celery, and onion, and a little bit of bay leaf and maybe a tiny bit of thyme, I would be very careful with that because you can quickly blow out the taste of the soup or the stock. And then just make your stock and... I kind of feel like gnocchi would be a really amazing, wonderful garnish for such a pretty light broth. So, you know, just a little bit of wild mushrooms, maybe morels in the broth.
If you want to make the gnocchi even lighter, cut the potato in half and use ricotta.
Yeah. Oh, ricotta gnocchi would be really pretty. And yeah, just have your fresh sautéed morels in the bottom of the bowl and heat up your gnocchi, pour your broth over it, and, you know, a little chervil or a little bit of fresh thyme or some very light fresh herb as a garnish, even just a little bit of Italian flat-leaf parsley. But don't do anything, you know, strongly flavored with it. And I just think that would be such a pretty broth. I love, again, I think it's very fun to make gnocchi at home. Another thing you can show your children how to make and kind of do the thing as a family if that's your situation, and flicking the gnocchis on the board, if you have one of the little wooden boards with the grooves on it, is kind of a fun process. So
I have a feeling that when I show my daughter how to make gnocchi, I'm going to have gnocchi in my ears before long.
I love gnocchi, so I think having that little bit of light, puffy, you know, pillows of something in a rabbit stock broth-based soup would be very nice.
Especially. Yeah, when you said a rabbit broth, it immediately made me think of going to that restaurant, the Pretzhof in the Alto Adige, and they make a rabbit broth in the spring when, surprisingly, there are abundant rabbits.
And, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and they always make canoodles.
Okay.
Canoodles with the nettles for the for the soup.
Okay. Yeah, that's nice.
Which is terrific. That's a nice, interesting accent.
What wine would you drink with that soup? The one I was talking about with the gnocchi and the morels.
It's, you want something really, I mean, it's super delicate. So maybe a very clean Sylvaner, a middle European varietal. So you see them from Alsace sometimes, from the Tirol, the Alto Adige sometimes. Mm. But maybe a Sylvaner.
What wine would you have with your acorn squash and apple soup?
Ooh, that's, I mean,
Let's skip the Padrón pepper relish and just talk about the soup.
No, big American Chardonnay. Well, the relish doesn't have to be a dominating thing. It can be just a little bit that you stir in to just give it a little bit of final seasoning. But a great big toasty American Chardonnay would work, no question. I think that's probably the...
What about the beer soup? What would you drink with that?
Beer?
Would you drink the same kind of beer you made it with, or...
It depends. I mean, how rich and how heavy is the soup going to be? How potato-y is it going to be?
I don't think you should want to make it too thick and rich. I really don't. I think it should be, you know, light on the potato and light on your consistency. Make sure there's a good amount of stock in the soup so it's not too thick.
If it's not too thick, then I would actually drink a rich beer with it. So if you made it with a you know, with stout or something, I would still drink something that's pretty rich, but very, you know, serious golden ale, something like that.
Mm-hmm. What about whiskey? Would that be, or would that not?
Sounds fun. I may not remember the next course.
Oh, boy.
What about whiskey? Let's see if you have enough memory for a chef challenge.
Okay.
You think?
Let me have it.
We need some of Flip Wilson's old theme music for the Sakatumi before we go into Chef's Challenge.
Oh, I can't believe your first thing is puff pastry. I gave you puff pastry too. Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy.
Oh, it's just
that's
amazing.
So funny. All right, puff pastry, porcini mushrooms, ground lamb. I love ground lamb. Curry, fresh thyme, carrots, beets, chioga to be specific, sweet white turnips versus not sweet white turnips.
You know, the purple top turnips are kind of really bitter and hot. Sweet white turnips are fantastic.
Don't get mad. Smoked trout,
I'm not
Granny
mad.
Smith
I'm
apples,
serious.
Arugula, apple cider, butter, creme fraiche, annatto. Oh, okay. Annatto is, what is annatto exactly? I always forget what it is exactly.
It's a spice.
But I
color things like saffron, but it has much more earthy flavor.
Yeah, I don't know what it really is, but you have to pound it in mortar and pestle, and it's almost resiny. It's kind of an odd texture, annatto, but it's really delicious.
It gives
and used
a very
in a lot
particular
of,
perfume.
Yeah, very much in Latin cooking.
It's always in sofrito.
Sofrito. Okay, so the ground lamb I'm going to make. You know, you can call it whatever you want, kebab, meatballs, whatever.
Lamb burgers.
No, I don't make hamburgers.
This is a good day.
I don't make lamb burgers.
Yeah, well.
You know I don't make burgers.
Hey, chef, nice burgers.
All right, so I have beets. I'm going to roast the beets, so I have to get those in the oven. I'm going to...
What are you
going
to season the lamb burgers with?
Well, hang on. I'm just getting my priorities straight
got
here,
excited.
Mister. So I'm going to roast those beets in the oven with just corn oil and in a pan with foil and lightly salted and peppered. I'm going to make a first course with the smoked trout. So smoked trout, just make sure the pin bones are out of the fish, and I'm going to remove the skin. And on the backside, there's what we call the bloodline in a fish. You just want to gently spoon that out. And I'm going to break the smoked trout into pieces and serve it on a bed of sliced Granny Smith apples, the turnips, and make a salad with apple cider. Is apple cider, or it's not vinegar. It's just the apple cider. Okay. I'm going to reduce down the apple cider. I'm going to add corn oil to it when it comes out of the pan. And basically that's going to be my dressing. So, and I have arugula. So the smoked trout pieces on the plate with the sliced turnips, the apples, and...
turnips, raw turnips? Turnips roasted chilled?
Raw turnips, thinly sliced and salted. The arugula with the apple cider vinaigrette. And actually, you just gave me a whole category of food here. I'll slice the roasted beets and also add that to the salad. So that's the salad. And with the lamb, I have porcini mushrooms and porcini... Well, so I'm gonna... You have curry and thyme. So I'm going to add salt, pepper, and curry to the lamb. I'm going to pull the puff pastry out, roll it out as a flat sheet, and I'm going to lay in a whole layer of the ground lamb. You have carrots here, so I'm going to boil the carrots in salted and sugared water. Once they're out and tender, I'm going to slice them long, lengthwise, and relatively thin, and lay them on top of the ground lamb. And what else do I have? Okay, the annatto. Actually, there aren't any onions on here, but I assume I have onions somewhere.
You got onions.
So I'm going to saute onions with a little bit of the annatto, and I'm going to add that to the layer above the carrots, and then I'm going to roll that in the puff pastry and into a
You're making a lamb palmier?
No, not a palmier, because that would be rolling it into two circles, but one solid circle. Just roll, and brush it with egg wash and roast it in a 375-degree oven, and keep an eye on it because you have raw lamb, which in this case you're going to have to cook the lamb all the way through. So you want a pretty thin layer of the lamb. The carrots, as I said, were sliced, so those will be thin, and you want it to all get nice and hot. And I don't know what I'm doing with the butter and the creme fraiche. I'll just look at that. That's it.
Unused dairy. Never happened before, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go. Oh, here you go, Tony.
Lamb burgers in a blanket.
I can't believe I gave you puff pastry, too.
That happens.
That's kind of funny.
It's the puff pastry time of the year.
I guess.
All right. A wild boar head, tête de sanglier. Very lovely. I can't wait to have a long conversation with my tête de sanglier. Carrot, celery, onion, rosemary, morels, button mushrooms, garlic, chicken stock, escargot, puff pastry, parsley, white wine, red wine. Oh, no, we don't want the last two. The escargot and morels sound like an awfully good snack. Also rolled up in the puff pastry. So we're going to roast them a little bit. The garlic, the morels. Well, the morels are going to take a little bit of time to get the flavor really concentrated. And probably a little bit of chicken stock as well. Once they're concentrated, take them down probably almost too far, and then bring them back a little bit, hydrate them a little bit back with the chicken stock, and boil that liquid off. And then you have the escargot, the sweaty garlic, the morels for little packages, maybe little beggar's purses, mm-hmm. A nice little snack. And then you got to deal with the tête de sanglier. So I never like to say face meat on the air, but you have choices to make. So the old-fashioned sort of country way, that's the protein of the dish. So mm-hmm. You're going to have the, you'll have glands to deal with, but they have that as well. What you want, hopefully, is a whole lot of stock and carrot, celery, onion, and rosemary, and you're going to boil that guy off and chill it down and reduce that stock that you have from boiling that off into a jelly. It's a cold dish that you're going to make. And you literally, you scrape all of the charcuterie off, what could become charcuterie off the bone. And then you have choices to make if you want to make something in pastry again, if you want to make, if you want to press everything into a terrine. If you're going to do that, don't cook it off too far. If you do cook it off to about medium rare, you could then pull everything, prepare everything, you know, with various knife cuts into form, make a force meat if you've got eggs and mm-hmm. a little breadcrumb and that sort of thing,
sure.
and go into the tureen with it. But I think if it was me, I'd rather have it hot and just, and you literally just pull the meat. It's funny, that's a very Bordelaise thing to do, like the Loire Valley thing to do, is to have that as a cold supper kind of a dish.
That sounds so good. That would be delicious.
Like a not Sunday afternoon thing, but it's like the, you know, it's the Saturday afternoon.
Wash day dinner.
Well, kind of like going on a hunt day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what the reality is, the jelly that you get from that stock, that reduced chicken stock from boiling off that Tector Sanglier.
It's going to be seriously good.
All the jelly that is in that guy is going to be serious business.
And the flavor is going to be tremendous.
You just need bread. You need like great like day old bread to like to grill and to put a little fresh garlic on and have that with the jelly and the face meat
mm-hmm.
from the Tector Sanglier. And that you can start drinking pretty good with that. I think that requires a certain level of relaxed attitude about your meal.
What wine?
Oh gosh, I mean it could be really good Loire Valley Cabernet Franc, like a Chinon, something like that. Something that's got a real verve and can take on the strong flavors that are there. But in the end, I mean, the meat is pretty mild flavor. It's pork. The jelly's going to have good flavor. That's the treat.
I wonder if we could get that around here. Can't be easy.
No, the only ranch I can think of that has wild boar growing on it is down in Texas. So, And it's not like they have them in a farm. You literally have to like call a guy, and he goes out and then he hunts it, and then you get it. So, but that is one of the more exotic challenges that you've given me.
I thought you would be up to it.
Yeah, now I'm interested in doing some weird 1880s sort of a hunt day.
That would be fun.
Meal, yeah, no question.
So with the puff pastry that I'm, you know, on my challenge.
You mean the Lamburgers in the blanket?
Lamburgers in the blanket, yes. Lovely.
You could drink Dellinger with that in a heartbeat. I tell you what, that Zinfandel Petit Sirah blend that they made from their neighbor's property,
mm-hmm.
From that fruit, they only made it the one time in 2009. That would be great for that kind
that
of
that was
a,
special. That, Very
that,
special.
That kind of a dish. And, in a heartbeat. The smoked trout apple turnip business needs something bracing. I don't think that there's anything, maybe really, really snappy Sauvignon from Eastern Austria or something from the Comtal. That might do it. But it's funny. We definitely have a rhythm of doing easy challenges and harder challenges. I think I gave you a little bit harder challenge today.
I liked it.
Well, I think that's all we have time for on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you'd like to correspond with us, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you'd like to download this program or any other podcasts, please go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. And if you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf, or on Instagram, Chef Wolf.
Thanks so much for listening.
Have a great Sunday.